Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette here, along with Dr. Samira Umat and Dr. Ken Pentland. Dr. Jerry Mixon has the weekend off. He'll be back in that new year. In the meantime, let's tell you a little bit about what we do here at Longevity Medical Clinics. We have three clinics, Linwood, Tacoma, and Kirkland, and wonderful patients and an incredible staff that are ready and willing to help you with whatever it is. What would you say, Dr. Pentland, is the number one thing that when you have someone come in, they are concerned about?
A lot of times, like Dr. Umat mentioned earlier, they are concerned about things that their parents went through.
Yes.
Or some of their older relatives, if it wasn't their parents, or sometimes their friends, dementia or cancer or things of those nature that they want to take more proactive role in their health to avoid, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just improving their own physical, mental performance to, you know, live the best years ahead instead of behind.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. A lot of times, if you're doing well, there is no motivation or incentive to come to a clinic while, you know, people think they're doing well. It's only if they see an example in themselves or in and around themselves that they go, wait a minute, this is not okay.
No.
Many of my patients, when I've asked them what brought you here, the thing is, we watched our parents go through these things. So a lot of things run in families, diabetes or dementia particularly. With dementia, you know, it's really sad because you lose that person twice. Once when they lose their memory and so they have no awareness of who you are or who they are. And so watching your loved one go through that is tragic. And as we all know, there's really no cure for dementia. And then their second time is when they actually do pass away. And this was not dementia. I have a friend who's caring for his elder parents. And he said recently, you know, modern medicine is a blessing and a curse. And it's difficult because his parents are vibrant and, you know, love to live life. And now they're preoccupied with their illness. They're frail. Mm. They're weak. They need assistance. And so to watch that transition in somebody you love is very hard. And then as you're watching them and helping them, you're saying, I don't want to be there. I don't want to have that happen to
me. Yes.
So what am I going to do today to prevent that? And that's the key. You don't have to say, well, this is normal. It's going to happen. So it's going to happen to me too. You have to seek out what is going on in medical science that will help me prevent that from happening to me. Because science is not static. We have not stayed still. You know, we have progressed. Mm-hmm. Some things we've learned that were good and are building on, and some things that we learned were not good and we are not doing them anymore. There are things that I learned in medical school that we don't practice anymore.
Okay. Is that what it means by practicing medicine? Yeah. It's always changing.
Yes. Science is a story told in installments,
yeah.
They say.
Okay. It's evolving. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you have to be inquisitive. Don't accept that normal Medicare evaluation that says you're good
and for your age.
Go, yeah, I'm good for my age. That's not okay. And so look around you and go, I want to be able to jump. I want to be able to enjoy the grandchildren, as you heard earlier. I don't want that to happen to me, even though, quote unquote, few years ago, it was considered normal. So what is it that you can do today? Some things are simple. Some things are up to you.
I think one of the things you touched on was we're not necessarily restricted to the fate of our parents, right?
Yes,
genetics are a blueprint, but they're not determinative. They're potentials.
Right.
Right. And so a lot of it depends on our choices as well, how those genes express. And I always tell patients, it's like you're in a river headed for a rock, but you have a canoe and a paddle, right? You can you can decide if you miss that rock with
right.
With enough pre-planning.
I use a similar scenario where that freight trail is coming down your path. You are standing in the middle. Are you going to have the capacity to step out of the way or not? And most people want to. And
yes.
So if you want to, then, you know, there are a few things you must start with and then build up on that.
And the very first step is making an appointment to come in for that free health analysis at any of our three longevity clinics, Kirkland, Tacoma, and Linwood. When you come in, you'll see our wonderful facilities. You'll meet some of our staff, and you'll have the opportunity to take two tests, a blood test and an in-body test. And this will let the doctors know what you're at risk for or what could be down the road, things like, dementia, cancers, diabetes for sure, heart disease, sexual dysfunction, and so much more. They can find out so much more. And then there's a larger lab panel, which we encourage you to do. It's about $2,000 in lab tests. But because we have our own lab, we can do that test and give you an hour with the doctor for just under $600. And Dr. Pentland, maybe you could explain what that large lab, what it involves and the information that you get, your patients are getting from that.
Right. Yeah. We measure a lot of the same things you measure with standard or conventional Medicare care, but we have different reference ranges, tighter reference ranges. Like Dr. Mixon says a lot, normal stinks.
Normal stinks. We want you to be optimal.
Right. Yeah. So the blood test will incorporate most of the major hormones, testosterone, estrogen, growth hormone indication. Pregnenolone, progesterone, estradiol.
Yeah, I'll just add there that, you know, a CBC and CMP might be something that they might be getting done. Mm-hmm. But the hormonal panel that we do, they don't, regular medical practices don't do that.
Right.
A lot of times people never measure DHEA. They never measure pregnenolone. They don't even know what they are.
Or even if they do, they say the levels are age appropriate and don't
normal.
Do anything about it.
And the other thing is, you know, our reference ranges are the same as other reference ranges. It's just that our ideal range is within the reference range is looking at when you can get optimal function from that lab value. And if it is not functioning ideally, then we need to know. Say, for example, simple thing is fasting glucose levels. Up to 120 is considered normal, but if you're 119 and you're told you're normal, then it's a disservice to you because ideally you want that to be in the 80s. Mm-hmm. So we hammer that in every single visit and we go, we need to bring this down. Yes, you're in the, normal is a bell-shaped curve. They took a whole bunch of people and they took the lowest value and the highest value, discarded the lowest 2.5% and the highest 2.5% and came up with normal. But that doesn't mean that you function well at the lower end when you need to be higher, or at the higher end when you need to be lower. So we look for when do you perform your best physiologically? And then we say, let's aim to get you back into there. So for sugar, fasting glucose, we aim to get you back into the 80s. That's not easy to do. And so we have our own ranges. Again, they're in the reference range, but what is ideal in that reference range?
I always use vitamin D as a great example because normal levels in the blood are something like 30 to 120. but it's only when vitamin D is between 60 and 90, you get risk factor reduction for about 50 different diseases.
Wow.
So, you know, autoimmune disease risk, cancer risk, and infectious disease risk reduce in that range. Yet you get a level of 40, doctor says it's fine. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, exactly. And so understanding that means looking at a deeper dive into human physiology. So really, when I was doing my board certification for age management medicine, I reread physiology. And it was amazing that the fund of knowledge I had this time around was so much better than the first time around.
Ah.
The appreciation, the understanding, and how it functioned was, oh my God, the light bulbs went on and go, why didn't somebody tell me this? But I think it's part of continuing medical education. And then you find a niche that you are passionate about and you go, you know, I want to do a deeper dive into this. And for me, it was age management medicine. And it just, it was transformative. You know, the first talk was something about nuts and bolts of hormone replacement therapy. Another one was about, oh, Dr. Terry Hertoghi. He's a fourth generation Belgian endocrinologist. He used to come from, he still does. He comes from Europe and he talks about thyroid. Mm. He has pictures of patients that his great grandfather took, and he would look at that and go, that is a thyroid problem and you have to see this. And you know, it's amazing that you, what you learn. And Europe is far ahead of us in age management medicine. And some of the technologies that they adopted, and they are very freely available, are much more advanced over there than they are over here. But it was amazing. They, you know, I've been doing this for a long time now. I did my board certification almost two decades ago now. And it's just like the advances. I go back as often as I can because every time I go back, there's something new that I pick up. And so if I'm learning new things,
oh, yes,
the, you know, science is so far ahead of that. So you have to, and that's why we do what we do. And with Dr. Mixon here, always doing our research for us and looking into the newest technology, we're at an advantage in our clinics simply because we are vested in this.
Mm-hmm. And we have three clinics I mentioned earlier, Kirkland, Tacoma, and Linwood. And we would love to have you come in. We call it a free health analysis appointment. It's your first appointment. We'll do those two blood tests. You'll meet with the doctor. And then let's find out what Longevity Medical Clinics can do for you to not just keep you where you are, tired, exhausted, gaining weight, not having motivation. We want you to live an optimal life. So here is that number to call to make your appointment right now. It's 1-866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. You can also go to our website, which is lmclinic.com. That's lmclinic.com. All right, we're going to take a quick break here, and we will be back with more of your calls. In fact, Margarita, we are going to be talking with you next, so stay right there. This is Leading Edge Medicine.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in the 5 and 10, glistening once again, with candy canes and silver lanes aglow.
And we're back with more Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette, here with Drs. Ken Pentland and Dr. Samira Umat. We're talking about your health as you're aging. Now is the time to call and get into our call queue with your questions. That number is 800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. We're headed to Kent right now. We have Margarita on the line. Hi, Margarita. Merry Christmas. Welcome.
Merry Christmas to you. Thank you for answering my call. I do have a hand that one of the fingers gets stuck. You know, when I'm trying to open and close it, it gets stuck. And in the morning when I first get up, it really hurts. And as I keep moving, it gets better, but the fingers still get stuck. It don't get it straight. I don't know if I explained myself.
Sure. Yeah, you did. Absolutely, you did. No, thank you for calling, Margarita. So how long has this been going on, Margarita?
For about a month.
Okay, and is it only one finger and one hand?
Yeah, in my right hand, one finger. Oh, okay. The one is next to the little finger.
Okay, so what you're describing is called a trigger finger, and what happens is the tendons become inflamed, and then the sheath becomes inflamed, and therefore when you're trying to move it, it kind of gets stuck sometimes. And it happens either because you're using that finger a little too much. Sometimes it happens if you have underlying diabetes or rheumatoid arthritis, and those people are more predisposed to it. And sometimes we just don't know the cause. But overuse is one of the causes that can cause that trigger finger. And what you describe is very typical, that it hurts, it's painful, it's more prevalent after you get up and it's stiff in the morning, and then as you range it and move it yourself, it kind of gets better during the course of the day. To prevent it from getting worse, you do want to make sure that you stretch it out a lot. So I would suggest some physical therapy as well. You keep it stretched. I like paraffin wax because it helps keep it warm and that allows you to stretch it. But also you want to make sure that if you don't know whether you're diabetic or not, that you go find out, you see the doctor, and then you help them get you some evaluation and some treatments. The risk with this is if you leave it untreated and that tendon continues to shrink and pull, then sometimes people get that finger in a bent position, and that then affects function. Remember, our hands are very important for doing fine motor skills, and sometimes we don't pay attention or think about it until we lose it. So if you lose your grip, you can't open, you can't do your buttons, you can't grip and grasp, it'll become hard. So the earlier you get treatment, the better off. In the short term, some things like, you know, Aleve or Advil, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, omega-3 fish oils, relief factor, those are good things as long as there's no contraindication for you to use them. Those would be good things in the short term. But stretching it, making sure that you do find out if there's an underlying cause for that problem, and then getting treatment early is what I would suggest. Anything else, Dr. Pendler?
I think you covered a lot. I mean, certain medications might cause that too, but and I always am a fan of, you know, when you do pick an anti-inflammatory supplement or medication, to then apply heat to the area to draw blood to that area while the anti-inflammatory is in the blood. So that kind of improves the
flow to that area.
The flow to that area, right. It's a good technique.
Okay. All right. Are you diabetic, Margarita?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Make sure that your doctor checks your sugar levels and don't let it creep up on you catch surprised, okay?
Okay. So do you think it's heat is better than cold?
Heat is good. Apply some warmth to the area, then stretch it. But you must stretch. Stretching is the key. When the tendons are warm, they stretch better, okay? So doing stretching exercises when they're cold is harder. They're stiff. So you have to warm it and then do your stretching exercises. You get better results. So warm it, stretch it. So the home paraffin wax is really good. It's just a little container that you plug in. It has paraffin wax in it. You dip your hand in it and you let the wax cover your hand. And then you let the wax sit on your hand, and that really penetrates the heat deeper than if you were just to put a hot pack. And then you just peel the wax off and it's reusable. So I'm really fond of that because it kind of is something people can do for themselves at home. Mm-hmm. That kind of helps penetrate the heat.
You know, the other thing that I thought of is we did have a patient that had a contracture in one of the tendons, and came in for Viasure treatment.
Okay.
So the sound wave treatment from the Viasure is well known to stimulate connective tissue and improve blood flow, improve stem cell proliferation. And so he did see improvement with that condition. So it wasn't 100%, but he definitely noticed significant improvement in that. So that could be an option as well.
Well, yes, but don't let it get to that.
Right. Yes. He was in a more advanced state.
Make sure you get, this is early. You've only had it for 1 month. It is manageable right now. So make sure you see the doctor, get some heat therapy, use some non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, do some stretching. and make sure you find out that there's no known underlying cause for it that can be treated, okay?
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome, and good luck to you.
All right. Thank you for the call, Margarita. Phone lines are open for you at 1-800-465-8770. We would love to have you call in and be part of our show this morning with your questions. 1-800-465-8770 is that number while we're waiting for the next caller. Dr. Umat, what are some things this winter that we should be aware of? Because so many times as we're aging, we don't take care and then something happens and uh-oh. So what are some things that some of your patients are dealing with?
Well, we alluded to a little bit of this earlier, Lynette, is the winter time is, you know, that flu season time, immune compromise. And unfortunately, during the winter months, we experience a lot of deaths in the elder patient because they're immune compromised. They catch the flu, or they catch a viral infection, and that viral infection then is the trigger to basically multisystem problems, which then unfortunately they're insurmountable. They cannot basically fix them, and one thing leads to another. You know, we've all seen our elder relatives go through something like this, or a loved one or a friend or a neighbor when they were healthy, but then caught a little cough and the little cough got worse and then they went in and, you know, so immune support during this time for me, and especially as we get older, and if you have multiple medical problems, you have multiple comorbidities, you do want to make sure that you are more prepared and not caught by surprise. So if the grandchildren are coming, if you are going to go visit them, if you are going to be in a shopping mall that is busy, if you're going to get on a plane, you know that you're going to be exposed to viruses. Be sure that you have built yourself up enough to be able to do that activity. I'm not saying avoid the activity. I'm saying enjoy the activity, but stack the odds in your favor first. Build up your vitamin C. Make sure you're immunized. Make sure you're taking all your medications. Your diabetes is under better control. Your blood pressure is under better control. You're not leaving anything to chance. And then I believe in a lot of nutrients and supplements, and I do think they make a big difference. Vitamin D, we've talked about today. I'm fond of echinacea. So there's a lot of different things, and depends upon what I'm really targeting at that I will then focus on. If it heart health is an issue, I like ubiquinol or CoQ10, and with that I'll add a little bit of taurine. Or so it just depends upon what other things are going on. But there are a lot of different things you can do. And then remember, it's so hard to do, and I'm guilty. Sugar is a culprit.
What?
Sugar in every form is going to not help with anything other than just taste and make you feel good for a few minutes.
Yes.
So, you know, if at all possible, minimize the sugar intake.
Oh, man. Even the homemade.
Yes.
Toffee.
Don't
that
even tell me.
People make with the chocolate on top on almonds.
I think I wanted to add something to that, you know, because we are coming into the holiday season.
Yes.
We're actually well into it now. And it is a time of indulgence we see for patients. And January is usually a very busy time because of that.
Yes, that's true.
When I worked at the GI clinic previously, January was our busiest time. New Year's resolutions.
That's right.
And
that's right.
People wanting to, you know, like I felt really bad after I ate so much during those couple months. And now I want to take care of myself.
Yeah.
You know, if you find that your symptoms are always worse that time of year, maybe you want to get a little more testing done. You know, and relating it back to GI health, as I like to do.
All pathways go to the gut.
Yes.
Health begins in the gut.
I used to say all roads lead to Rome, and he says all roads go to the gut.
That's right. Hippocrates, famous Greek physician, used to say that all disease starts in the gut.
I'd prefer to go to Rome myself.
Yes.
But, you know, one of the theories out there is lectin theory. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that today. You know, people have different blood types, A, B, A, B, mm-hmm. and O. Mm-hmm. And each blood type, you know, has specific antibodies. When we have a food that is incompatible with our blood type, that those lectins that are incompatible with our blood type, we tend to have negative health side effects. The blood cells tend to clump up around these lectins in our system, and that can lead to inflammation, right? So Dr. Diadamo talks a lot about this, you know, negative health reactions such as symptoms that look like IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, or arthritis, you know, outside the gut can be caused by things like that. Often if those are the kind of symptoms that you're getting, and that, mm-hmm. you know, things, if, for example, if you have symptoms when you have too much dairy mm-hmm. or nightshade vegetables, you know, you may consider getting some advanced testing like stool or blood testing to find out, you know, if you've got these hidden sources of inflammation in your system. You
first
want to
avoid them.
Right. And sometimes it's a question, what do I avoid? What is it?
Yeah.
It's not always obvious. So, you know, talking to us about it and getting some further testing would probably be a good idea.
Yeah. Right. No, I completely agree with that, Ken. You know, objective data basically mm-hmm. always helps. And some people are more intuitive than others. Some mm-hmm. people can know, oh, I absolutely know that when I eat this, this will happen to me. And they avoid it and it doesn't happen. But the vast majority of us really are not able to pinpoint. But so we know that common allergens today are wheat, dairy, eggs, sugar, mm-hmm. soy. So if you fall into that category and you try to avoid it, then you go thinking, okay, now what can I eat? Mm-hmm. There's really very little left.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Pentland, you had mentioned nightshade vegetables. Mm-hmm. And for those listening going, what is that?
What are nightshades? The Solanaceae family. Yeah, nightshade vegetables include things like potatoes, eggplant, peppers,
tomatoes
mm-hmm. And even certain favorite herbs like ashwagandha or goji berries also are in the nightshade family. But
okay, and those can cause issues for some people.
And yes, so the issues with that is usually related to inflammation and arthritis symptoms. A lot of times, you know, we, especially for prostate health, we tell people to eat tomatoes and lycopene, but it is in the nightshade. So again, here the issue is balance. Risk versus benefit ratio. If prostate issue is overriding it, I would still say go ahead and do the tomato and the lycopene from the tomato because it is helpful for prostate health. On the other hand, we also recognize that it may aggravate some pain symptoms.
Got it. Oh, thank you, doctors. We will be back in just a moment with more Leading Edge Medicine. Here is that number to get through, 1-800-465-8770. Our phone lines are open and you can get right into that call queue. 1-800-465-8770. We will be talking from Richard in Seattle in just a moment. Stay right there. Leading Edge Medicine continues.
It's the best time of the year. I don't know if there'll be snow, but have a cup of cheer. Have a holly jolly Christmas. And when you walk down the street, say hello to friends you know and everyone you meet.
Oh, such a fun song. I love that. Oh, and I just spaced on who was that singing.
Oh, yeah, that was Burl Ives.
Burl Ives.
Used to do Lipton tea commercials. Too.
Yes, and you know what? He spent his last days in Port... Let's see, I believe it was Anacortes or Port Angeles, one of the two places.
Really?
And he had the gate to his home had all of those little Rankin Bass characters that he voiced, like snowman that we remember and Rudolph and all of those little characters.
Oh, so interesting.
Yes, Burl Ives, yes. All right, it is that time of year. All right, we're going to head right to the phones, doctors. We have Richard on the line calling in from Seattle. Welcome to the show, Richard.
Welcome. Thank you. And I appreciate the service you folks offer. I really do. I've been listening to you for the years.
Yeah. Wonderful. How can we help?
So here's my problem at this point. I started with having on my left nipple just a little bit of pain, like somebody's kind of like sticking a needle into it. but it didn't go back into the breast at all, just at the nipple. And if I'd tweak it with my towel or something like that, I'd get a little bit of pain. And I thought, okay, well, I don't know what that is. And then now I've got it in the right nipple as well. And I have myself scheduled for Fred Hutch for a mammogram. But I've been thinking more about that, and as I talk to people, and the number of women who go in for mammograms, the number of those people who result with potentially cancer from the radiation or bad effects from the radiation or whatever, I'm thinking, I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. So what kind of information do you have to offer?
Yeah. So, first of all, if you are going to do repeated mammography, there is a very slight increase, but the benefit of finding a lesion far outweigh the risk. That's why we do the screening for women, and we start the screening depending upon the risk factor, either at age 40 or higher, and they're done every mm-hmm. 2 years. In men, however, okay. where you are just going to get that one scan, the risk and the exposure to radiation to cause a problem is really, really very minimal. I think more important would be what is the cause of your pain, and to find out sooner rather than later, right. as you know, would be more right. important. So I think if you're weighing risk-benefit ratio, I'd go ahead and do the investigation to find out the cause, because you're not mm-hmm. going to likely need repeat mammograms.
Okay. All right.
Okay. And the technology has advanced. You know, this used to be more of a risk factor with the older technology, and with the newer technology, the risk is really very minimal, Richard.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
All right. Well, I thank you for that input, and I will take that under consideration, move forward. Thank you. And
all right.
You guys all have a great Christmas.
Yeah, thank you.
You too, Richard.
You too. Good luck.
Hope you're able to find out about what's causing the pain there. We're going to stay in Seattle. Ann is on the line. Welcome to the show, Ann. This is Leading Edge Medicine.
Hello, Ann.
Hello. How is everybody this morning?
Wonderful.
Bright and chipper.
Wonderful. Yes.
This subject came up. I am a longtime practitioner on several different kinds of fasting. I've done intermittent fasting. In fact, still do it. I do a daily or a weekly 40-hour fast, and I also have done extended fasts, and I'm looking to restore that extended fast practice because it seems for me to provide benefit in controlling a really malignant binge eating disorder that I've had since I was 3 years old. So the question I have, which is kind of interesting, is how to share this information with my care providers in a way that will help them make sense of it. It's largely a spiritual practice, but especially with the extended fast, it has repercussions medically. I noticed, for example, that my fasting glucose sits at like 95 or 90. Mm-hmm. 90 if I exercise, 97 if I don't. Mm-hmm. And my body really feels bad if it gets lower than that. This may be a result of a fasting practice. I don't know. But it's one of these things that, you know, I'd like to embrace because it seems to be important to my health. I have lost 100 pounds and kept it off for 5 years.
Wow,
fasting
congratulations.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Fasting wasn't actually central to that. In other words, I never did fasting as a weight loss thing. It's a spiritual discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But it would be really nice if, I mean, I've been doing this since I was 35 years old. I'm now in my 60s. So, mm-hmm. you know, this is a long-term thing. So mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if you can give me some guidance in that, as to how to share, I mean, I have my ideas, but how to share information with my care providers so that we can all work as a team on this and not derail it.
Well, I think when you go into your provider and you share this information, they're going to be looking for, is this safe for you? Right. So, you know, for example, if there's something, if you're underweight or if there's something in your blood work that acts like a red flag, they might try to dissuade you from that. But if you seem to be healthier with the practice in general and your blood work looks good and you maybe provide a reference, you know, article or two for them to look at, maybe even before the visit, that might, win them to your cause. Right. That's what I would be looking for my patient. I would be, you know, wanting to make sure they're safe and that the practice is helping, not hurting.
Yeah, you know, I wish there were.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
I wish there were
decent articles, but most of the studies I've read on fasting are very short term and don't involve any spirituality. Mm. So they're not, it's like comparing apples and oranges. It really frustrates me. Because I completely agree with you. My blood work looks great, by the way.
Very good.
Yeah.
My A1C is 5.2, I think. My fasting glucose is 95, which for me is about vintage. I'm within a good weight range. I have decent muscle mass. I exercise 6 days a week.
So, you know, as long as I can remember, in time immemorial, right, people have fasted for multiple reasons. In the past, food was scarce. Now that's not the problem, but they do fast for religious reasons. You mentioned spirituality as being important to you. And there are many religions in the world that will fast for extended periods of time, and they maintain health and wellness. So I think that in and of itself is a good reason. But again, I agree that your personal safety, and you mentioned that if you drop your fasting glucose level during that fast, you don't feel good. I'll tell you, my first code blue as a medical student in the hospital was hypoglycemia. Mm. And so I'm well aware of low sugar causing an acute emergent event. You know, code blue went off in the hospital. I was a medical student. I was petrified. I was so scared. But this was an easy thing for them to correct. And but if you're out in the community and you don't pick up on it quickly enough, then it could cause a fatal event for you. So recognize that prolonged fasting is helpful, but it can also be detrimental. And knowing for your personal self what is your trigger and how quickly you can get there is very, very important for you to gauge. I will not dissuade you from doing something that is important to you. Just find the safety parameters in there for yourself. And that's very important.
I think you misunderstood me. I've never had my blood sugar drop lower than 80 during a fast. Not ever.
Okay, but you
It's just that if I try to maintain it at 80, fasting or not fasting, it doesn't matter. That's just too hot. That's just too low for me to feel good. And I think because my body is used to the fasting practice, it may have just set up a higher set point for fasting glucose, which would guard against the hypoglycemia you're talking about. Because there are actually two dangers in these fasts that I know about. Well, three. One is you don't ever want to get nauseous.
Yeah.
And related to that, two, you don't ever want to get your electrolytes out of balance.
Yeah.
And three, obviously, you don't want to get your blood sugar too low. Because those are critical events. And I've never had any of them happen. As long as I've been doing this, as long as I keep the discipline the way I was taught to do, it seems to be fine.
I think her name, I'm forgetting her name right now. I think her name is Mindy Pelz. Are you familiar with her? She's written a book. Fast Like a Girl. And she has done several podcasts And she's been out on social media, and she has talked about the positive impact of fasting. So Dr. Jason Fung is another MD that I have read extensively. I've listened to Mindy many, many times. Dr. Fung is a endocrinologist. He's actually treats diabetic patients on dialysis in Canada. And he has written about the benefits of intermittent fasting. And he goes back to the physiology and he goes, we were never meant to eat as much as we eat right now. And he believes that a prolonged fast is beneficial for everyone. So there are a lot of physicians that do believe in intermittent fasting, and I think it is safe to do for the vast majority. I think you're talking about a little extreme, and I think Mindy has done those. She has talked about them, written about them. She has a huge following with fasting as well. So I would maybe suggest you read her book for a little bit of guidance so you don't have any problems with it.
There may be some good references in there as well.
Yeah.
I have a patient who's using the Mindy Pels protocol.
Yeah.
Yeah, the references are what I'd be looking for. I mean, it's sort of interesting. I'm an evolutionary biologist, and I have never understood how, with most of my ancestry coming from north of 55 degrees, why you'd ever think the food supply was consistent at that latitude.
Right. So true.
It just does not make sense to me, and it doesn't make sense to my body, and doesn't, you know, I have to fast seasonally, and I'm very careful about that.
Right. And you're right, you know, our biology was like that. Remember, when there was plentiful, we had to eat it to store for reserve for when winter was coming, because if we didn't have enough reserve, then it was basically, you could literally die during the winter months because you didn't have enough storage. So that is our genetics, and now that is gone, and we've forgotten about what it means to give the body a break. I mean, we are reading so much about autophagy. Dr. Walter Longo has written extensively about, not about fasting in general, but about caloric intake and the types of food you need to eat to maintain longevity. And so there's a lot written about it. I think the difficult thing in the medical profession is finding consensus on what is good for everybody. And there is no such thing. One thing that is good for you.
Well, there's not going to be, because if you think about the genetics of it, right, some of us came from latitudes near the equator, and some of us come from, you know, these really high northern latitudes, and the inbreeding coefficient is higher in the northern latitudes populations, and so, you know, we're a little more genetically homogeneous, actually. And,
right.
You know, it's just,
right.
I mean, there's all this stuff out there. And and so, anyway, this has been a really enlivening discussion, and I really appreciate you take the time to take this rather unconventional. I mean, my doctor, when I talked to her about it, she said, how would we know whether you're not eating because you're depressed and you're not eating because you're fasting? And I thought about that, and I said, okay, I can tell you how you would know. Number one, is it seasonally appropriate? If it's Lent, I'm probably fasting.
Yeah.
Number two, is it, you know, do I know the rule of the fast? Does it have a projected end date? Is there a structure to it? If there's, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
Just being able to share that information and making sure that, you know, people actually ask.
You know, I think a few more of my patients could do well with some minor
fasting
or intermittent fasting. You know, we think about the proliferation of fatty liver disease, you know,
the
liver just being sort of
inundated,
like, let's put this aside for later, we can't handle it right now, and just builds up a storage of you know, fat soluble toxins around the tissue.
And an important topic around now, right, when we're constantly eating.
You could think about it as how you really need to, like, recycle the storage places in your house. You know, you've got your storage unit, your deep reserves, and then you've got your fat.
Let's
kind
declutter.
Of thing.
I call it defragmenting your hard drive.
There you go.
Well, yeah, that's another good image. Anyway, so thank you very much. I will let you go. I will let you go. God, like it's my
No, we appreciate your call. Thank you, and good luck to you in your ventures. I think it is sound. Just stay healthy and safe and do what's right for you. You know, I was at a conference once, and this gentleman got up and he talked about fasting. And I believe he was an MD, but he was practicing a lot of holistic medicine and functional medicine. And he said something that really stayed with me. He said, don't ask your patients to do something that you haven't done yourself. Mm. So if you're telling them to go on a water fast, you better do it yourself first.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
So I've never asked anybody to do a water fast.
I've done my share. I've done a 3-day. I've done a 7-day with the lemon juice protocol, mm-hmm. you know, or the 10-day. I've even done a 10-day, but that's some people do up to 40 days. But
yeah, no, I found Mindy Pell's really very helpful in that, and Dr. Jason Fung has been a great resource, and he's written extensively about mm-hmm. the benefits and the pros and the cons. Mm-hmm. But mostly, his talks are and his lectures are about benefits.
All right. That's good. Good conversation. All right. Looks like we've got time for one last phone call from Vancouver, Washington. John is here with us. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine, John.
Hello, John.
Hey, thank you very much. Glad to be here. Thank you for taking my call. I got a question on what is a calcium score? How is it determined? And what's a good range?
Great question. Mm. We measure a calcium score in the coronary blood vessels. It is done by a CT scan, and it looks at old calcified buildup plaque in the supply to the heart muscle. So it has nothing to do with soft ongoing buildup of plaque, a remodification of the plaque. It's all old calcified plaque buildup. But it is important to know, because if it is a lot, then it will compromise blood flow to the heart muscle itself. So if you think about the anatomy, we are looking to see which blood vessels are most compromised. If it is in the LAD, the left anterior descending vessel, which is what we call the widow maker, then that's the most dangerous. We do want to help our patients know that, understand what it means, and reduce that plaque buildup. But if we get a report from a patient who's at high risk that says they have no calcium plaque buildup and the calcium score is zero, which I've gotten many times, it doesn't mean that they are risk-free. It doesn't mean that they can do whatever they want with their diet. All it means is that there's no buildup of plaque right now that we can refer to. It doesn't mean that there's no ongoing modification.
How do you reduce it?
Well, lifestyle modifications, right? So we start first with what is your cholesterol level, what is your diet, what is your weight, what is your visceral fat, what is your personal history, do you have lipoprotein particle A, and then we start with dietary modifications, use of a lot of fiber in the diet, changing more to a whole food plant-based type of a diet, and then using medications to help lower it. If it is not dangerous, we can start with supplements, but if supplements are not effective or not doing the job, then you must resort to medications to help reduce LDL cholesterol level, total cholesterol level, so you reduce further buildup of plaque.
So if you have something like a high calcium score result, how often would you recommend the cardiac inflammation panel then?
Yeah. Again, I think it depends, Dr. Pentland, on, you know, who my patient is, how compliant they are. I definitely will repeat it annually if there is a high score. Sometimes I will do it every 6 months if I'm instituting something specific that and I want to target and see, but definitely annually.
What's a high score?
And a calcium score?
The Agustin?
Yeah.
I think it was over six. I'm sure exactly.
Yeah, 100. You know, so the score looks at the left anterior descending, the right circumflex, the right coronary artery, and then they give you a total value based on all of these vessels. And there's usually 100 is below 100 is safe. 100 or higher is caution, and then the frequency of testing increases if you go above 200. If memory serves me right.
Okay, does that calcium score, does it also indicate the blood flow like in your legs?
So this is specific to blood flow in the heart and serving the heart muscle itself. Is it generally true that if you have plaque buildup in one area, you'll have it in another area also? You can say that.
Okay.
You can say that, yes, if there is vascular disease in one part of the body, well, why wouldn't it be in the brain or in the legs or in other areas?
Sure.
Because it's systemic,
thank you,
right?
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, sir.
Okay, thank you for that. John, we have just a few minutes left of our show. Doctors, do you want to add anything to that? Of course, we're not here next week. We will be recorded with some great new material from both Dr. Mixon and Dr. Umat, plus our best of phone calls from the year.
So that heart, investigations for heart disease is very, very important. And hyperlipidemia and its risk and causing plaque buildup and what the investigations mean are equally important. Overall, however, you start with the basics. You look at your diet. You do your blood test. A calcium score is a CT scan of the heart. And we combine it with a cardiac inflammatory panel, which looks at whether there is inflammation markers telling us about impending risk for rupture of the plaque, absolute values of the cholesterol particles themselves, and the size of the particles themselves, because not all sizes are at equal risk. For example, LDL particles, the smaller they are, the higher risk they are. If you have tons of LDL particles, but they're nice and big and fluffy, well, they're at less risk of causing disease for you than the small ones. If you have high lipoprotein particle A, then you do need to reduce your LDL, because to date, there are more trials going on, but to date at this time, the only way to reduce that risk of causing a heart disease problem for you, heart attack for you, is by lowering your LDL. And we have shown that with the PCSK9 inhibitors, lowering your LDL will also lower your LP particle A for many patients. So there are things that can be done, and your risk profiling is important to find out what is your personal risk and what is the treatment for you personally. And remember one thing for women out there that are listening to the show. Postmenopausal women are at high risk for heart disease, and we know that estrogen replacement in these women will reduce their risk for heart disease. So, you know, we don't equate estrogen to heart health or gut health. We started the show by talking about cancer of the colorectal cancer, but also heart health. And so it's not just that hormone of reproduction. It has so many other functions that are very important for you.
Very good. Well, good discussions today on a variety of topics. This, of course, is Leading Edge Medicine. Thank you, Dr. Umat, and thank you, Dr. Pentland, for all the information today and for answering the questions and the emails from our listeners. Like we mentioned, we will be with families next week and the week after, so we will not be in the studio, but we would love to have you join us on Leading Edge Medicine. We will have some great information for you as the year closes, and we're looking forward to 2025 and some wonderful phone calls that you may have heard or maybe you missed. Some of our favorites will be featuring over the next 2 weeks, and then Dr. Mixon, Dr. Umat, and I all back in the saddle here in 2025 on January the 4th. Have a wonderful rest of your Christmas season, your holiday season, and a very blessed new year. We will be back with more Leading Edge Medicine, of course, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. And do yourself, give yourself a good gift this year, a gift of health, and give us a call to get in for that free health analysis appointment. That number is 1-866-86-YOUNG. We talk about this every week on the show. Maybe you've been going, yeah, I need to call. Yes, you need to call 1-866-86-YOUNG or check us out on the website, lmclinic.com. Have a great rest of your weekend, and we'll see you live in the studio next year.